It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Theron and Mary Jo Foley are here. We're going to find out about Mary Jo's new job. She's working with Paul, of all things. Plus, the new Windows holographic has a new name. And we'll talk about the new mixed reality developer's kit that's about to come out. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Theron and Mary Jo Foley, episode 507, recorded Wednesday, March 1st, 2017. Cortana with benefits. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Amazon Web Services. For companies to succeed today, they need a range of tools that most cloud vendors just don't offer. Amazon Web Services, the leading cloud service provider, listens to builders, offering more solutions than any other. Check out podcast.aws and see how AWS lets builders build. And by WordPress. WordPress salutes all the small businesses out there making a big difference. Create your small business website and get 15% off any new plan purchase at wordpress.com/windows. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover Windows Weekly and Microsoft and everything happening there on, there above, there too. There's the word I was looking for. Mary Jo Foley's here from All About Microsoft. Were you ever a lawyer? It seems like you should have been a lawyer at some point.
Me?
Yeah.
No.
No?
No.
No.
I am a community magnate. Now, though, did you hear about
I do, and I have a big question for you, but we'll get to that in a moment, because first I want to introduce your new boss, Paul Theron.
Yeah, exactly.
Just
you
like
understand
the old
our
boss.
Relationship.
THUROTT.com. So what is all this? I saw this tweet. I congratulated you, Mary Jo Foley, but I note that you haven't left your job. What's happening?
So Paul's parent company, BWW Media Group, has hired me on to run their community site that they're building on IT Unity. So they become a new client of mine, and I still have ZDNet as one of my clients. I'm still a freelancer, but...
Oh, you've always been a freelancer. I didn't realize that. Oh, okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Right. So for Paul's new site that they're building over there, I'm going to be the person who kind of discovers new cool enterprise IT talent and gets people to read other people. So I'm like the matchmaker here.
You're the Ariana Huffington of enterprise blogging.
Doesn't that mean I have to take naps?
Can I be the Al Franken in this story?
Yeah, you should be. That's congratulations. That's great.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fun because it's a whole different part of what I do. Like, it's more like the research part of what I do than the only like writing news stuff. So it's something I love doing, is finding new people and getting them to connect. So I think it's going to be really fun.
Of course, now that you've said this, you're going to start getting emails and tweets and all sorts of stuff.
I already have. Say,
yeah. Mary Jo, Mary Jo. It'll be like, welcome back, Connor. Mary Jo.
Yeah.
That's what I want, though.
But you do want that.
Right. If you're somebody out there who writes really cool enterprise tech stuff and nobody knows about you, or people need to know more about you, you should definitely ping me on Twitter or email me or something.
And this new site will be like an aggregator?
Yeah, like an aggregator. Connecting people, kind of like almost like getting people to come to forums to discover more new voices and also to be able to talk among themselves about enterprise stuff.
Nice.
It'll be good.
Cool. And it's not up yet, though.
It's today. We're just getting it launched. So it's going to be kicking off in March.
Okay.
As of today, March 1st. And then every day I'm going to be doing a post about somebody interesting and new. So stay tuned.
So I could go
and
there
I have
now.
A newsletter.
What's the site?
I think there's a link to it on Petri now, right? Is there? Petri.com, P-E-T-R-I.
Okay. And I'm going to go to Petri here. And
trouble pulling up.
Okay. And then IT Unity, is that it?
Yeah. Yeah, see IT Unity,
right there
there's a tab.
It says Petri, right, they're gonna be, Therat, IT Unity. It's like some weird fortune cookie.
Yeah, they're right in the middle of rebuilding the IT Unity website, but Petri is their enterprise brand. So that's like the enterprise sister site to Therat.
Yep. So I'll show I'll show people real quickly so they can see.
Thanks.
For those watching, if you go to PETRI.com, you'll see right there IT Unity. And that's – I see why. But you could go to ITUnity.com, it looks like.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Also. And then, but they're rebuilding that now, so it's going to look a lot different soon when they revise the site.
And who – and this site is for IT professionals or CIO level? What is the
– IT pros – primarily. So we're going to be talking about things, all kinds of Microsoft enterprise tech, but also enterprise tech from other people like Amazon and Google and VMware. We're going to have a lot of different topics in here once the forums are kind of going again. Yeah.
So just to be less jokey, Paul is now your kind of your colleague.
He is.
You're both running sites for Petri in effect.
Right. Yeah, and Brad Sams, you know, he's running Petri. So, well, Brad Sams is like the
So it's you, Brad, leader. And Paul.
Yep.
And who's this Petri guy? Is it Rob Petri from Mary Tyler Moore Show?
Daniel Petri. He started this site probably close to 17 years ago-ish, IT pro focused.
Well, that's kind of neat. So this is like one of those, you know, feel-good stories where the guy's risen he created this all by himself, right? And then it's become a massive enterprise, raking in millions of dollars.
Well, he's already – so he did what I did, which was – except he did it earlier, which, you know, the guy who – or the couple of guys who own BWW bought him out, right? Now it's not a one-man show anymore. So they have a lot of writers working there, kind of like Windows IT Pro used to be.
How does BWW feel about podcast networks? Would they be interested in acquiring a slightly used, but in excellent shape podcast network? No, you got it's mostly enterprise, or well, I guess Therat's not mostly enterprise.
No, yeah. Therat isn't enterprise at all, and so you know BWW itself is really just kind of like a publishing, like a web publishing company, really, because they own these other properties. It doesn't do anything itself beyond sell those things. It just so happens that Petri was IT pro focused.
Right.
IT Unity.
And BWW stands for Buffalo Wild Wings?
So it doesn't stand for anything anymore, but originally the company was called Blue Whale Web.
Oh.
And if you want to know what that means, I cannot help you.
Once in a blue whale.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, it's kind of what we're seeing is this kind of maturity of what was, you know, 10, 15 years ago, just kind of these hobbyists.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
now exactly. And now they're real businesses with, you know, it's really kind of cool, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, Daniel Petri started his site roughly at the same time I started the Supersite for Windows. And it couldn't be more mom and pop than the Supersite for Windows. In fact, Supersite for Windows was just pop. There was no, you know, it was a one-man show. And, you know, it wasn't called this at the time, but Penton, essentially, you know, the predecessor to Penton, purchased that site and another site from me and hired me to keep doing it. And, you know, that was actually 18.
It's kind of like my dream. Somebody would buy this and hire me to keep doing it.
Well, I can assure you the amount of money that I received for this explains why I'm still here working every day.
You got the big bucks. So,
yeah.
No, that's great. I mean, I just love it. And there it blew. So you used to go to Colorado for Petri, mm-hmm. right? Or no,
well, for Penton or for Windows Penton. IT Pro. Well, so, but here's the interesting thing. Petri's parent company, BWW, is a smaller organization than Windows IT Pro was and a much smaller organization than Penton was. Penton is like a giant Viacom conglomerate, crazy company.
Okay.
Windows IT Pro was always based up in Fort Collins area, Loveland,
right.
Colorado,
right.
because the guy who started that, Mark Smith, or Mark Smith's friend, I can't remember his name now, but he was from that area. So that's kind of random, right? But I went out there for 15 years plus because that was what work was for me. Well, over time, they got rid of everybody and I left. And there's a lot of people who still live in that area who, you know, were trying to get other jobs in publishing. And so when BWW came around and started doing Petri, of course, they're looking for writers and looking for people who know the business. A lot of those guys come from Windows IT Pro. So the thing that's amazing for me, one of the things is I still go to Fort Collins regularly for work. I still work with a lot of the same people.
Oh, funny. It's very
confusing. We've had this opportunity to rehire or to hire a lot of the people I used to work with who are great. And so, you know, George or whoever will talk to me, you know, about different people and we'll kind of, you know, yeah, it's been a crazy. And I go to this, I've gone to the same hotel so many times, like the people there know me. And like the guy who runs the restaurant knows me, and it just keeps going, you know. So that's been kind of cool.
I love it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
good.
Congratulations.
The first post just went up. It's on Petri.
while we were talking, Mary Jo filed. I love it.
I'm like, okay, when is this going to post? There it is.
Oh, so it was already up.
Yeah.
I know this guy.
You know this guy? Yep.
Nice.
I'm slightly disappointed it wasn't me, but I get it.
My first pick on like somebody you guys should all read is Gary Pretty, who he's a Microsoft MVP on bots and cognitive services, and he works for Mando Group. So I linked one of his posts here, and I'm advising people to kind of go check him out if you care about bots, and I think a lot of people do these days.
So. EdBot?
A different bot.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, you have frozen solid, so we're going to pause for a moment. Why don't we?
Okay.
And Alex, maybe you want to call her back and see if we can make that work. I don't know.
So here's the connection for Gary Pretty for Leo.
Yes.
About a year and a half ago, or a little bit less, we were out in Manchester, England, for a tech show, and that was a show that Gary Pretty organized. And actually, there's a very small chance you've even met him because he's come to the U.S. for various Microsoft shows, and he's been at least a few of our meetups at Rattle and Hum, for example.
Oh, I probably have met him then. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. He's a great guy.
Nice.
And so when Mary Jo and I went, we did like a kind of a beer crawl in London. Gary and his friend were organized that for us. And we're hoping to get out there again sometime.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. So while we're getting Mary Jo Foley back, why don't we start with the first topic of the day, which is, surprise, surprise, Windows 10. Why would we be talking about that?
And a few things happened today. Actually, it's been crazy busy the past couple of days for some reason. You would assume this has been a non-busy week, but it hasn't been. So let's see. How do I even begin this topic? You know, last year, there were a bunch of controversies around Windows 10, right? And one of the biggest ones was what I called Upgrade Gate, which was the, you know, forcing Windows 8 and Windows 7 users to upgrade to Windows 10 against their will. But one of the other big issues that's semi-related to this is for people who are now on Windows 10, all of the updates that come down and the unreliability of those updates, and that maybe a legacy software platform like Windows 10 isn't necessarily a great choice to run as a service, right? That kind of Windows as a service deal. And then, of course, they did the upgrade to the anniversary update mid-year in July, I guess the end of July, and that was a disaster, right? And so they expected to have that thing rolled out within a month or two, and by the end of 2016, it still wasn't completely deployed because they kept coming up with all of these problems. So what Microsoft has announced today is that they're going to address these problems, and they're going to do that in the Creators Update. There's some other stuff related to this with privacy and so on, and we can talk about that in a little bit. But the big thing here is that people have had these situations where they get up in the morning and the computer has rebooted and they've lost data. People have been working on their computer and their computer has rebooted right in the middle of them working on it. I've heard many, many stories from people who show up to present at a show, for example, or just come into work and turn on their computer, and they can't use the computer because an update has occurred overnight, and now they have to wait until it's installed.
That's still happening.
Yeah. So they're going to address this in the Creators Update, and they're going to give a lot more prompts, and they're going to give what they're calling a snooze button. It doesn't say snooze button in the UI, but basically it will prompt you and it will say this is what has to happen, but it will let you supply a schedule for it to happen so that these updates are occurring at the best possible time for you, not just whenever Microsoft thinks they should happen.
They'd be fixing a problem that's been with Windows for feels like a decade.
Yeah, but see, it's a particularly big problem today because with Windows 10, of course, there's so many updates, right? There's monthly scheduled updates, but there are just updates. You know, if updates need to happen, updates happen. It's the way it is. There's stuff related to this that is kind of smaller new from a news standpoint. I mean, they're going to try to reduce the number of reboots that these updates require. They've expanded the time frame for the inactive hours. And so the window of time during which no updates will ever be installed, for example, you could make that a bigger window and so forth. But this is something like I'm not taking credit for this, obviously. Many, 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 many people complained. And I think the more important complainers are, of course, the customers. But I was really active complaining about these issues last year. I asked for Microsoft to consider making a reliability initiative, similar to the Trustworthy Computing Initiative, and to stop development of new features and fix this problem, because the crazy reliability issues that they had with the anniversary update, obviously, we can't allow that to happen ever again. And I also wrote extensively about this Windows as a service, and my belief, frankly, that this can't work. That you've got this big, hairy, you know, mess of a ball that's Windows. It's that literally 30 years plus of code base, and then you've got these small and light mobile apps and cloud services on the other side, and you want them to behave the same way. And I just still kind of feel like this is not going to work. But I appreciate the steps that they're taking. I appreciate especially the transparency that they are finally trying to adopt, which is another one of those things, you know. And I've had conversations with these guys formally and privately where it's like, you know, you're not helping yourself by being quiet when things are going wrong and people want answers, and you're not going to come out and be the public face of that. And so that's starting to happen. And so we kind of met some of the guys virtually through this blog post today who are in charge of this stuff at Microsoft and are going to be the public face of it going forward, where they're going to publicly discuss what they're doing. And I just think that's so important. So it's great that they're finally doing this. And so we had to kind of wait for this major update to Windows, unfortunately, for this to happen. But it is finally happening.
Mary Jo is back.
I am back.
After some jumping through hoops.
Yeah, sorry about that.
I'm sorry. It's not you. I think it might be Skype. Do you have any connections at Microsoft?
No, I don't know anyone there.
Do you have any Skype credit that you'd like to use on something other than Skype Wi-Fi?
Skype's gone way downhill over the last few weeks. And of course, hits us because we use it a lot.
It's because of Amazon Chime.
Is that it?
Well, they're feeling the heat.
Yeah, they're feeling the heat. Oh, man. Anyway.
Yeah, you know, so I was listening to you guys talk about the announcements they're making around the kinds of updates they're going to mm-hmm. provide in Creators Update. And that change, is it going from 12 hours to 18 hours for the active hours window?
That's a good question. I think you are correct.
That's what's going to stop a lot of problems, because people who are shutting their machines down at night thinking, oh, if I shut this down, my machine's not going to automatically reboot when there's a new update. We're finding out the reverse, which is if you did shut your machine down and the update came through and you had set it to defer for 12 hours, it would do it anyway, even if your machine was off. So you turn it back on and it'd be like, oh, it rebooted and I lost all my work or whatever. So that one change alone, I think, is going to be really big.
You know, we'll see. There's this, I think when it comes to this kind of stuff, it's a little bit like what we see at the airport, you know, with security. In other words, there's some security problem, some bad happens. And now mm-hmm. we're always responding to that last threat, you know. And so what we have is this situation where the anniversary update was a lot less reliable, had more problems than they thought was going to happen, that were surprised by it. And of course, now they're laser focused on making sure that never happens again. And it kind of makes me wonder, you know, what will be the thing that happens this time? Like, will it be something else? Like, I hope it goes smoothly. And I, you know, this thing's been in testing for many months and so forth. But I guess we'll see. You know, if we're still talking about the creators update rolling out in October, we will know something has gone horribly wrong.
Yeah, no kidding. And did you talk about the privacy part of today's
Not
announcement?
Yet.
While I was
I was saving it.
That's all yours.
Okay. So the other thing that Microsoft talked about today in things coming to creators update was they said, remember those that privacy settings changes that we first talked about in January, where we said we're going to make privacy settings more granular and transparent? Well, they're now testing with insiders as of today, I believe, what that experience is going to look like if you're upgrading from an older version of Windows 10. So say you're not installing Windows 10 on a brand new PC or you're reinstalling it. Say you're somebody who's on anniversary update and you're going to go to creators update. They're starting to show insiders what that looks like. Like, here's the screen you're going to see, the first splash screen. Here's the second one. Here is what the settings are that you can you know, you have a little explanation against each setting. Like, if you choose on, this is what's going to happen. So they're getting to test this right before Creators Update comes out, which is good. It's good that they're having a lot of people test this upgrade privacy experience because, as we know, the privacy regulators, especially in the EU, have not been very happy about Microsoft's telemetry in Windows 10. It's been an ongoing problem for Microsoft. And I think they're hoping that this new set of more granular controls is going to head off future problems for them on this front, although I'm not sure it will. But maybe it'll do something to appease some of the people in the EU who are still objecting to the data that Microsoft is collecting automatically as part of Windows 10. But they talked more about privacy settings today, confirmed it's going to be in Creators Update. And showed the splash screen. So it's coming along. I think we both have said, Paul is, I think, a little more than I am about, this is kind of like a overkill on the antitrust regulators part. I think there are some justifications for worrying about the what Microsoft's collecting and how they've been collecting it up to this point. One thing that many people have pointed out is there's no way to completely shut off telemetry in Windows 10 unless you're on the long-term servicing branch. So will this be enough to make the regulators happy? I don't know. Will it be enough to appease people who continue to say Windows 10 is spying on them? Probably not. But Microsoft is doing something there with the privacy.
Yeah, it's... I'm sorry.
That's it. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, it's not clear... You know, so if you heard Cortana's voice while you were talking, I apologize. I think I mentioned a week or two ago how loud it is when it comes on. You know, I did a refresh on this build just to see. Mm-hmm. God, this is so weird.
And I was talking to you.
Yeah, I muted it.
It's a different computer, right? You're not going to do it on your Skype.
Yeah. No, I'm not. Okay. They've changed the look of setup a little bit in this build, which is... you know, kind of unimportant, but it's amazing how loud that is. That's all. Sorry.
Oh, we didn't hear it actually. I don't.
I heard it just in the background.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yeah, it was really loud. Sorry. Okay.
Yeah. So you have the most recent build on that machine, Paul. Is that, did you get that today? When did that come out?
Yeah. Well, last night. So there was one thing I really wanted to test because part of this announcement today was that they've changed the upgrade experience for the privacy control. So if you think back to a couple of builds ago, in order to see the new privacy screen in setup, remember I kind of referred to it as like privacy theater, where they got rid of the express setup option and added this privacy page instead. You had to do a clean install of the operating system, which wasn't technically possible because they didn't provide an ISO for that build. So what you'd have to do is reset the computer and then you kind of go through setup again that way. So with this new build, the one that came out last night, they added that a new privacy screen for upgraders. In other words, you're on Windows 10 version 1607, which is the anniversary update, and you upgrade to the creators update, which is 1703. You get the setup experience, the out of box experience after the, you know, after all the stuff happens offline. That screen is actually really attractive. They showed a picture of it. I don't believe. Well, no, I should say I know. It's not actually in this build. So Microsoft showed what it's going to look like. It's really nice. Like it's a nice looking screen. In fact, it makes me kind of wonder why Windows setup doesn't look that good all the time. But it's just the same options as before, right? So I mean, it's been a week or two. I don't remember how long ago it was when they added this to a clean install, but it's the same secured or privacy theater as I discussed previously. So nothing has really changed other than there's a really nice photo. It's a beautiful screen, but it's the exact same setting. So, you know, it's okay. It's okay. I don't know what I don't know how I feel about how this looks. a little freaked.
Which?
So in this new build, they've changed setup. And actually, there is a major change here.
Oh.
There is no way to not enter your email address.
Unplug the Ethernet port.
Yeah.
That's what I always do.
I apologize. I'm sorry. Yes, there is. They've changed the wording. It's kind of strange. Okay, sorry. I don't mean to be distracted. I'm trying to figure out what's new and different. So I spent a bunch of time today with the VM. I went and installed the anniversary update fresh, you know, updated it, upgraded to this new build. And the screens that Microsoft is talking about were not there. So maybe it's something we'll see in the final release or whatever. Can I confuse this further?
Yes. Please do.
Cortana on setup is optional, right?
Yeah.
Cortana out of the box.
It is. So, but that's also, we could call that one Cortana Theater because the truth is Cortana is still integrated into the start menu into search, right? And so there are three levels of Cortana in a way. There's the where you say no, and then you get basic Cortana services. You say yes, and you get additional Cortana services that don't require you to log in. And then if you do log in with your Microsoft account, you get the third level, which is integration with your account, and it has save settings and cross-device sync and so forth. So, yeah, you do get that option. But I think you get that option in the anniversary update. I think that's been there since – I don't think that's
Cortana has? Oh, all the different levels of settings. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, because remember the big change in that release. Again, I could be mixing this up, but I think it was anniversary update is prior to the anniversary update, you could actually just say no to Cortana and you would get the old school Windows search experience from the start menu. And they got rid of that. Like you can't actually not have Cortana. You can just have different levels of Cortana.
Yeah.
You can have Cortana with benefits. I don't know. it's very strange.
We call that CWB.
Okay.
How much of this is for the EU, do you think?
I think that entire screen is for the EU.
Yeah.
I think the only reason that exists is the EU. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
It reminds me of Browser Ballot. Remember
right,
Browser Ballot.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and by the way, that was my point. You know, the Browser Ballot is an example of a government adding user interface to Windows, which is, even if you agree or even if you believe
not
that
ideal,
they,
though.
Nobody wants this,
not
right?
Ideal.
So
here's
the
government.
You know, it's like like when a kid sits at that round activity center thing and they can spin in a circle and
busy
there's like
box.
A ball they can spin and a little thing they that's what
Windows
that screen
busy
is.
Box.
The little switches you can play with. It's fun.
Excuse me, but the Dr. 1994 says the EU is not a government.
yes. Thank you. Listen, internet, don't ever change.
It's not a government. Yeah. If you look up the definition, I think you'll find it's not a government.
What is it, Dr. 1994? What is it? If it's not a government, what is it? What is it? It's a thing. It's a union. Let's take a break. No, let's not. Wait a minute. I'm trying to decide. I'm looking.
I know.
I'm thinking this would be a good place before we get to groove. Before we get your groove on.
Yeah, that's a
minor. Or do groove and then.
All right, do groove. Because Mary Jo wants to get a word in edgewise.
Well, I actually don't have anything to say about groove.
It says you just can't use it, it says.
Well, okay, so quickly. We all understand at sort of a basic level that if you join the Windows Insider program, you're going to be testing pre-release software.
Right.
And they have different rings. And the fast ring is, as its name suggests, is the fast ring. It means you're going to get the most software fastest, like the newest software most quickly. The slow ring is not as fast, right? And then there's a kind of a release preview ring where you just get app updates. Microsoft has updated the Groove and actually the movies and TV apps to support new features in the Creators Update, and you cannot get them if you are on the fast ring.
Oh. What?
I know.
That's so weird. Oh,
so here's the thing. I aside from having a fundamental problem with that and believing that that is, in fact, the point of the fast ring, I will just say this. If there is a workaround for this that actually works, then okay, fine. I don't mind doing a workaround. To be clear, the reason I want to test these features is because I am writing a book about Windows 10, and I would like to document this and then get on with my life. I'm never going to use the shared playlist feature in Groove. I just don't care about it. But the Fast Ring should do what the Fast Ring says it's going to do, you know?
Well, maybe there's a technical reason? I mean...
No, I'll tell you the why as Microsoft described it, and then I will tell you about the workaround that Microsoft described that does not work. The why is this is the version of the app that's going to ship with the Creators Update. Now, I want you to focus on this for a moment. The Groove app has already been updated with a feature that can only be used by the Creators Update. The Creators Update is shipping with an older version of the Groove app, which does not include that feature. I know. So that Microsoft. Anyway, it's okay, right? So there's a workaround. If you switch to the slow ring, update your apps through the store.
Turn on the fast ring again.
And then turn it back on the fast ring. That's fine. I'm okay with that. By the way, it does not work.
That thing you just said to do doesn't do anything?
It doesn't.
So is the reason they're doing this because they're trying to finalize the Creators Update, and so they're trying to minimize the number of moving parts?
There you
is
go.
This
there you
the
go.
Idea?
You see,
why?
That is, you just said in plain English what Microsoft could not say, and yes, I believe that is the point. But
that makes sense.
We have been testing this operating system for 6 months, 8 months, whatever the heck it is.
Right.
Why on the last Thursday before this thing is finalized did they add this feature to an app that requires this version of the operating system?
Right.
Couldn't you just wait? Just wait. Don't put it in there. By the way, they broadcast it. They talked about it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I waited for days to get it. I mean, you know, sometimes it doesn't happen that day. I don't know.
You know what's tricky as a normal user, I'll tell you what's tricky. So there are all these apps, right, that Microsoft calls part of Windows 10 that are actually not really part of it. They're bundled with it. Right.
Oh,
so
this is
I think this is why this is weird, because they're trying to act like these are all part of the operating system, but they're actually separate apps that are updated separately through the store. And they're not really part of the operating system, but
except
they don't want to say
thing.
That.
So, I mean, aside from the semantic nature of this debate or question or whatever, the fact remains that Windows 10 does ship with these apps, right? And so the Creators Update will ship with some versions of these apps, right? They're going to be whatever version they are. That's kind of the baseline for that build. Now, apps are updated on their own schedule. Those happen outside of the operating system, absolutely. In fact, you could make the argument, and I think it's fair, that assuming you're connected to a high-speed connection when you install or get the Creators Update on a new computer or a used computer, whatever, you'll get those app updates, like, immediately.
Yep. Yeah.
So why can't I get it in the fast ring of the Windows Insider Preview? Isn't that it's about testing the latest software? That's why I'm on the fast ring.
It's weird that it's on the slow ring, that you have to downgrade to the slow ring, then upgrade to the fast.
I don't want to be testing the shipping version of the app on the fast ring. I want to be testing the next version of the app.
Or the next
version, You know, that's why I'm on the fast ring. That's why I chose the risk of being on the fast ring, the benefit to me being that I will now have access to the latest software.
Right.
That's kind of the contract, isn't it? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I find this whole thing to be very illogical, but.
Yeah.
You should say that in a Spock voice if you're going to say that. I find it to be very illogical.
Yeah, just kind of raise one eyebrow or whatever. This is like my relationship with Microsoft in a nutshell right here. This is weird.
Odd.
Yeah, it's just crazy.
You're living, as somebody says, the slow ring in the fast lane. Or the fast ring in the slow lane.
I am driving in a BMW in the fast lane, and what's in front of me is a car with the license plate says Groove, and it's driving 30 miles an hour. And I don't understand why you're here and why are you bothering me? This is the Autobahn. Get out of the
way. Get out of the way. All right, let's take a break. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, and now Comrades in Arms. And we are going to come back and talk about Windows Holographic, the roadmap. But first, a word from our sponsor, the fabulous Amazon Web Services, AWS, you know the name. It provides a robust, scalable platform to help builders of all types and sizes innovate quickly. It's really one of the, it's like the pyramids. It's like one of the modern kind of edifices of the modern age. I remember, friends saying, I'm going to build an app. I'm going to start something pretty exciting here. And, Kevin Rose. And then having to install his server and going to the colo and all of this. It cost him money, cost him time, required a huge amount of technical aptitude that was outside app development. Actually, he was starting Dig when he was doing that. So it was outside that particular part of it. Now Amazon Web Service makes this all turnkey for builders of all types and sizes. You can innovate so much more quickly. Twice the compliance certifications, the largest global footprint of any cloud vendor. They do all the heavy lifting of the IT infrastructure management, so you don't have to. You can just focus on what you want to do, what you do best. You don't have to. I mean, I think Kevin enjoyed setting up a colo and buying the hardware and putting it in, but it really wasn't, that was a separate job. Let AWS do it for you. They provide the most comprehensive set of features for builders, releasing new features at a faster rate than anyone else. Last year, 1,000 new features. 1,000 services support virtually any cloud workload, more than 70 services that range from compute, storage, networking, database, analytics, application services, deployment, management, mobile, really anything you can imagine. And by listening to builders' wants and needs, AWS has been adding more capabilities than any other cloud provider, faster and more. Storage solutions designed to deliver secured, scalable, durable storage for businesses looking to achieve efficiency and scalability within their backup and recovery environments without the need for an on-prem infrastructure. They offer the widest global reach of any cloud provider and allows you to choose in which region your data lives in to minimize latency and costs as well as address regulatory requirements. You've got complete control of your data. With AWS, startups scale like enterprises, and enterprises can be as nimble as startups. Whether you're new to AWS or you have experience with Amazon Web Services, they want to give you the resources you need to support your success and do amazing things. Learn more. They've got a podcast, and it's easy to find. Podcast.aws. Podcast.aws. Look at the subject matter. Black belt tips, artificial intelligence, Amazon Elastic File System, AWS OpsWorks, a startup interview with Casey Neistat's Beam, which of course he just sold to CNN for untold millions of dollars. Beam lived on AWS. I bet it still does. AWS. Find out more at podcast.aws. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, we're talking Windows and Windows Holographic, which is going to be part of the Creators Update, right? But it's a user interface. Am I on the right track there?
How to even describe this easily? It's a shell, right?
It's a shell.
It's a shell. Okay. And Microsoft is making the Windows Holographic environment available to companies that want to build virtual reality headsets. So it's the same holographic shell that is in HoloLens, and now it's going to be the shell that PC vendors like Acer and Acer, Asus, Lenovo, a whole bunch of them have said they're going to build holographic headsets that tether to PCs and make use of this holographic shell. So that's what Windows Holographic is. Today at Game Developers Conference, Microsoft said, we're going to start shipping software developer kits for Windows Holographic this month, meaning March.
Does it require HoloLens? Do you have to have a HoloLens developed? No.
No. And the kits, it looks like to me, based on the way this blog post was written, all the kits are going to include an Acer virtual reality headset as part of the dev kit.
So this is what they announced, what was that, a build or something, that there were going to be these new third-party VR headsets.
Okay. Right. So okay. One they showed today is called Acer Windows Mixed Reality Development Edition Headset. Rolls right off the tongue. So people who went to the Microsoft presentation at GDC today got this golden ticket. And if you got the golden ticket, it means you're going to be the first ones to get this.
How much?
Does it give a price? I don't think it does.
If you're getting it hardware, it's got to cost.
I'm sure you're going to have to pay for it. But I don't think they gave us a price.
You don't need it.
Sir, this is a Lamborghini dealership.
Perhaps you want to go to the V-Dub dealership down the road.
Yeah, worded it. They said, as we begin the phased rollout this month of developer kits, the kits will include the Acer headset along with documentation and access to Windows 10 Insider Preview builds and the SDK. So that's what you get, but it doesn't say, and you have to pay blah. It doesn't say that.
Paul, wait a minute. Paul is speechless. Make a note of that right now. Paul has nothing to say.
No, there's a picture on the blog post.
All right, let me look at it. Let me pull it up.
Okay. It looks like, what do you call those things we had as kids? Viewfinders?
Remember Viewmaster. Those?
Viewmasters.
It looks like a regular headset. It's not.
Yeah, it does. It just kind of reminded me of that when I saw the picture.
It's actually kind of spiffy.
Yeah,
it's nice.
Now, okay, I get it here because I see a camera over the right side there. So that's what makes this mixed reality. Actually, there's two cameras, it looks like. Ooh, they look like little eyes. People will think you're a bug. So this means it is like HoloLens. It's not transparent, but the camera would give you a view of the world, right? Is that right?
Yeah, I believe so. So...
I mean, if they're calling it mixed reality, that must be, right?
Yeah. So one of the fundamental advances, I guess, in this platform, in these devices, is that unlike traditional VR solutions like HTC Vive that need something out in the room to help you understand the space, right, like cameras or whatever,
right?
This has this built in.
This isn't a view.
I'm not clear. I don't see any reason it couldn't do both. I mean, obviously, the HoloLens is providing you with a view through the glass outside. It's possible.
Even with Google Cardboard and Samsung Gear VR, they can turn on the camera in the phone and superimpose. Mm. You can see what's ahead of you. Yep. So that's not a difficult. The difficulty of this is extracting items in the space and interacting with those items in real time. That's the really hard, computationally hard thing. I noticed they're bundling this with a Asus Predator gaming machine.
Free, by the way. Yep.
Really? You get that too?
No. That's got to be. I think that's the $9,000 laptop.
Yeah, it might be. This is their gaming. It's a gaming. It's a Republic of Gaming, ROG, I think. But so you need something like that to drive this, no doubt.
Well, not necessarily. One of the points of this platform is that there'll be low-end devices, meaning I think what was the base price, $299 or $199?
Okay.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Really
but
cheap.
Did they talk about what the PC hardware, though, is? You know.
That's, yeah, and they'll be, you'll be able to run it to some capacity on fairly low-end hardware as well. Obviously, you have a better experience on high-end hardware, but it's not meant to be like Oculus Rift or whatever, where it requires a really hefty computer.
The thing that depresses me in this article that you wrote.
I get that a lot. Please continue.
Is that they said that mixed reality will be available for Project Scorpio next year. Mm.
I wanted to have a discussion around that because they were really weaselly with the words. We've known since they announced Project Scorpio last summer that VR, or I think they were calling it VR at the time, would be part of the platform. That doesn't mean it's going to ship with it, right? In other words, it's not going to. It doesn't mean it comes with a headset.
It could ship with VR, but not mixed reality.
That's what right. That's
I would guess. Yeah.
Yep.
Or I mean, so, but what does it mean? Like, in other words, there's so many details we don't know. Does it ship with some VR compatible hardware, or is it just VR compatible? And if it's VR compatible, what does that mean? Like, what's the thing that works with it? I always thought that. Well, as soon as Microsoft announced they were doing this partnering thing, I thought, okay,
yeah,
clearly this is the intent.
It's a third party these devices, device.
Yeah, but it will be these devices specifically. These things will work with Windows 10 computers, and they will work with Xbox consoles, not just Scorpio, but also Xbox One based. And
that would make sense. Yeah. You got to keep the price of the console down. Microsoft learned that last time. You can't.
That's a good point.
Every $100 makes you know couple of million. Difference in sales.
Okay, but let's like kind of step through this a little bit, because if this is all true, and I think we all agree this is makes sense and is true probably, then why would you come out with VR hardware for Scorpio in the summer of 2017 only to have it be replaced by MR hardware in 2018? I actually think that the intent here is that this is the solution for Scorpio. It won't be compatible in 2017. The capabilities and you know the hardware has enough to run it, but they will add this through a software update to Scorpio in 2018. In other words, that Scorpio will ship without VR or MR capabilities. That's how I take this. It's not
though the word in the sentence that's the trick word is the word content. Our plan is to bring mixed reality content to the Xbox One family of devices, including Scorpio in 2018. So what if you actually can use the headset, you know, the mixed reality headsets to develop maybe, or like somehow use them.
Do we know how much the that Acer headset or these? You said it was low cost, right? A couple $100.
Yeah. I would guess that this thing is $300.
Okay, so
I bet it's somewhere in there.
Here's what's going on. Let me explain this to you guys.
Okay, go ahead.
Your competition right now is PlayStation VR, right? The PS4 works with VR, and I don't know what sales are of the VR headsets, but they're a couple $100 for PlayStation. I would be shocked if Microsoft released a next generation console this year, the Scorpio, without at least VR capability. They'd need to at least offer something on a par with what PlayStation is offering. And it could I wouldn't be surprised at all if pure VR, if they do these headsets, these Acer headsets.
Okay.
And they're VR only.
Okay.
With some promise that there may be a software update in the following year.
Yes.
Or games available. An MR game is a hard thing to do. I mean,
Leo, it's important for me that you understand that what you just did is exactly what Twitter never does, which is to introduce logic and convince me of your correctness. So what you just said is even more likely than what I said. And I think you're right.
Because they've got to be painfully aware of how Sony is outselling them, which means they can't get a price too high.
Yes. No, you're right. That's right. That
PlayStation VR has sold, I'm told, more almost a million units. So that's not a market Microsoft's going to ignore.
Mm. Well,
or are they?
So I wrote a little editorial about that topic last weekend, and let me bring it up just so I can get the exact numbers on this one, because it's kind of amusing. Mm. Sony told some publication that they sold almost a million of these things, and the guy from the New York Times compared it to the iPhone. And they said, you know, in their first 3 months of the market in 2007, Apple sold 1.4 million iPhones, a feat now considered among the most successful technology products of all time. Guys, excuse me. Maybe you don't remember this because you don't cover Microsoft or even pretend they exist, but Microsoft sold 8 million units of the Kinect in the first 60 days. Eight million. So Microsoft, you're right, Leo, that they are looking at this and they can't come out lame. Like if they come out with, we'll support it eventually, that's going to kill it, even though I don't feel that this market is huge. They have to support VR right away. I think you are absolutely correct. But it's just amusing to me that this 1 million figure is held up as some unbelievable success story. You got to remember that the Kinect, when it came out, which, by the way, the Kinect we now know to be a turd, was the fastest selling consumer electronics device in history, according to the Guinness Book of World Records. 8 million units in 2 months.
It's now we just kind of see Connect as it was not that great. Right. Didn't really work out, right?
Well, that's what I'm saying. In other words, like, so Sony sold a million of those things, right? The final tally on those sales could be 1.2 million units forever, because the number of people that want to do VR on the PlayStation platform have already bought the, like, they're done. Mm-hmm. Like, that might be the, it may, by the way, it may go on to sell 20 million.
No, so but that saying, actually would be my guess. I think you've saturated the market already.
Yeah, I do.
But Microsoft doesn't know either any more than we do.
But perception matters big time. And they came out really poorly against the PS4 3.5 years ago.
Exactly.
However long it was. They can't do that again. It no matter how few people may use this thing, it does. They have to have it. And Leo,
exactly.
I think you're right.
Exactly.
They're already going to have all these headsets in the market. This thing will be compatible with those. They can do VR right away, and they can add MR functionality to the existing hardware in the next year. That makes so much sense.
It does. Yeah.
I am.
Plus, we didn't mention another piece. Redstone 3 is probably a requirement in some way for this, right? Mm-hmm. Redstone 3, we think, isn't going to be out till October, November. So then there's going to be the Xbox version or the Scorpio version of Redstone 3. So when they say there won't be any content till 2018, that makes sense because the operating system that you may be dependent on may not be out until the very end of this year.
This bolsters this argument nicely. Everything. God, we make so much sense. Well, actually, mostly two guys, but. No, that, yeah.
Maybe
I think too that's
much
it.
Sense.
Well, you know, you could, by the way, it might be worth even doing this. If you go and look at today's blog post from Microsoft about this mixed reality thing, which, by the way, there's been a big debate over whether Microsoft has just renamed Windows Holographic, because now they're talking about it as Windows Mixed Reality, you know, which I don't think they're actually renaming it. But the entire statement about the Scorpio was literally two sentences.
Yeah.
Actually, it's only one sentence, actually. It says, our plan is to bring mixed reality content, like you said, to the Xbox One family of devices, including Project Scorpio in 2018. That says two things. One, it's not just Scorpio. It's coming to Xbox One, right? If you have an Xbox One S, you'll be getting mixed reality content. But it is content, right? And I think that's hinging on what Leo said earlier, that the hardware will be there in 2017. Yep. It almost certainly is this partner stuff, right? Reduce the cost of the console. And now we're going to, I almost said augment it. Sorry. And we're going to expand its capabilities next year with mixed reality.
And this all makes perfect sense from, you know, a go-to-market strategy. You know, this, because they don't have, then you don't have to sell, you know, you don't want upset customers saying, I mean, I have to buy a new one a year later.
Yeah. No, this is. It makes too much sense not to be true, because we do deal with Microsoft, so anything's possible. But I know. I think that's it. So, by the way, I got to share with you the breaking news that happened while we started having this conversation, and it's been bugging me. Somebody contacted me the other day and said, you know, this thing that you've been complaining about with Groove and with the movies and TV app, this is a switch that Microsoft could flip at any time, right? They literally were artificially restricting the access to those apps to fast ring testers for testing purposes. But at any time, they could just check a box somewhere and those apps would come flying down. Mm. And I believe that moment happened while we were talking about it.
Oh, really?
Oh, no.
Because on this computer, which I've been checking for days, it just got those app updates.
Oh, man, really?
Yep.
That's
Or they just sent them to you and they said, let's shut Paul up.
Yeah.
That is hysterical.
The power of complaint. Once again, by being a whiny little pain in the ass, I have proven that. No. The other thing, by the way, someone alerted me to this via email, and I just tested this. I'm 99% sure this is a fact. So I don't know if anyone can verify this. But he said, this is kind of strange, but with the creators update, I can go into the store and I can download apps, even though I don't sign in with a Microsoft account. That didn't work that way before. And to my knowledge, that's the case. Although, see, I'm getting some feedback on Twitter that might not be the case. My understanding was that if you wanted to download a new app from the store. In other words, not an app that's pre-installed. Like, you can go into the store and update apps that are already on the system, but if you wanted to download an app, you needed to sign in with a Microsoft account. And that's not the case.
Hmm.
And I'm curious
if that's just a glitch.
Or if this changed at some time in the past and it's not. Some people are saying they have seen this before, so now I'm not 100% sure. But I had never seen that before. Obviously, if you try to download a paid app, it's going to prompt you to,
right,
you know, put in, you'll have to sign in with an account because you have associated payment methods and so forth.
I wonder if that has anything to do with the new settings around being able to download store apps only versus non-store apps. Would that have something to do with it?
Would it have something to do with privacy as well? I mean, why would you restrict apps app access to someone who you have information about? I don't know. I've had a couple people on Twitter say this is new. I've had a couple people say I've seen this before, you know, on existing. Yeah, so I'm not really sure.
Well, it's good there's some mysteries in the world. If we knew everything, life would be boring.
By the way, in the vein of breaking news, MS Power User has a quote from Microsoft that says the following. Microsoft has renamed Windows Holographic to Windows Mixed Reality.
Oh, wow.
They've done so to be more encompassing to the company's broader vision for the platform. We're unifying the mixed reality ecosystem around a platform that enables shared experiences and interoperability between headsets. By opening up the Windows Mixed Reality platform to the industry, we anticipate the growth of holographic apps to make for stronger experiences. Does anyone, Mary Jo appreciates this, I think Leo does too, the unending hell that is.
No. This is just good. This is good. This is good. This gives you work. You have something to
it
do.
Does. Yeah.
Leo,
you could be covering Apple, Paul. Think of it. You could be covering Apple.
Man. Okay. No, that's good. That's good. I need more information like that. That's true.
That's good. It's so hard to do a Mac Break Weekly because there's basically nothing to say for 9 months out of the year.
Well, the speculation is never ending.
But the thing is, for a long time, I refused to do rumors. Like, that's not news. That's just speculation.
Now it's all it is.
It's all you can do because you go, you know, all you have is rumors.
Yeah.
It used to be, at least, you know, some years ago, there were several events, you know, that what Apple would have, where they would go to Macworld Expo. They'd do other things. They've just slowly shut down where that, you know, the just a dribble of information coming out of them. So be glad that Microsoft continually changes course and shifts direction and confuses the hell out of you and changes names. So now, okay, we're going to dump this. It's no longer Windows Holographic. It's Windows Mixed Reality? No, Mixed Reality?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
I have mixed feelings about that.
I do too. I have augmented feelings about it.
Okay, but if they are delaying the next HoloLens until 2018, was that it, which we heard?
Oh,
it kind of makes sense to decouple that name from Holo something, right?
It may be holographic didn't also communicate really. Doesn't a hologram? It sounds like, you know, that the ghostly 3D image. Yeah. It's not what it is. It is mixed reality, so that's a better way. But I don't know if you want to use the word mixed at any time in a product name.
You know,
except if it's mixed nuts. Maybe mixed
Microsoft's
nuts.
Mixed reality outlook is mixed.
Mixed. The reality is mixed.
Well, you know, they've been kind of stumbling toward this name for a while, right? Remember in the beginning, it was there were holograms or whatever. It was holographic. It was
I never liked actually holograms. And
yeah, that was kind of picked apart pretty much the day they announced it. And then they've been talking mixed reality for the past several months. I mean, I think maybe since the Creators Update was announced or even earlier.
Yeah, earlier. June last year is when they started talking about mixed reality, right?
Yeah. This is like the Pentium name. You just have to keep repeating it until it makes sense in your head.
Pentium still sounds like toothpaste to me. I'm sorry.
It does. I wonder, what are they going to call Windows 10 Cloud? Because that name's dumb, I think.
Yeah, the cheap version.
They should call it Windows 10 Mixed.
what did they used to call it? Starter Edition, right? It's not really that
kind,
either, though.
Kind of like that. Or Windows RT, right?
Yeah. You know, RT was a terrible name.
Yeah.
Windows Basic.
We need some naming police.
At least they own the trademark.
They used that term, remember, for the user interface in Windows Vista.
Oh, did they? Yeah.
They had Windows Arrow and Windows Basic. Yeah.
Oh, man. Right.
They want it because what you want to say is, well, it's more secure because it's UWP apps only. It's less expensive.
Mm-hmm.
It's not for pros.
It also eliminates the prison of choice issue you have. Like when you go into a supermarket, there's like 127 salad dressings. Right. Like now you only have one and it's terrible.
Yeah, it's a Thousand Island or nothing, right?
Yeah, Thousand Island, exactly.
So how about that? Windows Thousand Island. Oh, I got it. Windows Generic Edition. White label.
Jeez.
Right. Never mind. Chris Capicella, I'm sorry. Just forget everything I said.
Windows Reliable Edition.
Reliable. No, I mean, they might play on that, right?
I like Windows Chrome. What's wrong with that?
I can tell you a few things wrong with that.
Chrome is the one thing that doesn't work.
I think basic
They want to compete with Chromebooks with that thing.
Well, that's the thing. I think basic is not a negative to people. They want something simple and straightforward and...
Especially these days.
And I think you shouldn't oversell what it can do, because that'll disappoint people.
Leo, you are a man of great logic.
I am. I drank some coffee this morning, and suddenly my brain works. I don't know. Just temporarily. Don't get excited.
Okay.
The Windows Polished Edition. Chat room's got a lot of names. Anyway, moving right along. Let's talk about Windows... And the cloud.
I just noticed.
Oh, you wanted to build 15. You already did build 1504 too, right?
We didn't really talk about it. But basically, over the past week, they've released two builds.
4.6 and 4.2.
4.2, yeah. I don't recall now because I'm so in a tizzy over this thing that just happened. If there's anything huge in either one of these, and I don't believe there is. I mean, look.
I think 15.04.2 is the first one where we saw this thing only allow apps to be installed from the store, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, right. Actually, so that's worth discussing.
There's a new bunch of settings that showed up in 15.04.2 first that lets you control which apps get installed to Windows 10 Creators Update. So you can either allow apps from the store only, or you can allow apps from anywhere, or you can warn me before installing apps from outside the store.
Right.
Now, why at this point you want to allow apps from the store only? I'm not sure, because right now, if you need any kind of business apps, they're probably not in the store unless they're there as a Centennial Bridge port. So my guess when I saw this is, I bet this is the setting, the underpinnings for this Windows 10 Cloud version that we have talked about before, because that version of Windows 10, we think, will only allow you to install apps from the store. That's my guess why they're doing this.
Yeah, in other words, it's the UI for a feature that's built, going to be built into the system that is going to be controlled by policy or whatever in that version of Windows to always be set to that one thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably the reason why, and it's funny because I think I wrote something to this when cloud was first being revealed, that there's a couple of things that make it make sense where RT didn't. Intel based is one of them. The ability to upgrade to Pro was one of them too, right? Yeah. And by this thing being like a little switch, you type in your product key, upgrade to Pro. You probably still have to reboot or whatever, but it's not like a giant upgrade. And, you're not installing, in other words, that thing is in both versions of Windows. So it's just controlled a little bit differently in cloud. It's like an easy switch. Yeah. This is the weirdest show we've ever done. I'm so confused.
We're all
now.
Just kind of sitting there like, huh.
I feel like we just got hit by a train.
I know. It's been a busy news week for Microsoft, actually.
Yeah.
Otherwise, in those builds, it's like basically tons of fixes, not almost no new features, and they're almost done. They're almost ready to RTM, release to mainstream, not RTM, release to manufacturing.
Oh, and you just reminded me, because they're adding all these goofy new features right at the end. Is dynamic lock still in the latest build? And yes, it is.
They
haven't changed. Yeah, and they still, so, you know, the one thing we've been talking about there is the thing that's missing is the ability to say, use this device, just this one, not all of my Bluetooth devices, right? In other words, my daughter could take my Bluetooth mouse and run upstairs with it, and my computer would lock. Right. You know, you obviously don't want that to happen. Anyway, it hasn't changed.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's that, right? That's that whole paragraph there. I'm just looking at your notes. That I'm trying to figure out. Yeah.
I know.
You're like, we're jumping everywhere. You're like, where are they in these notes right now?
That's okay. This is your show. I am just the facilitator, the factotum, the guy who reads the ads. In fact, that's what I'm going to do right now, ladies and gentlemen. We'll take a break, come back with more Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, our show today brought to you by WordPress.com wants to salute all the small business owners out there making a big difference. I love this list. The tool belt toting plumbers, the canine sweater stitchers, the horn rimmed glasses wearing flat screen TV installers, the corner deli foot long deliverers, and the mom and pop lawyers who look out for our best interests. While all of those small businesses are doing their things, WordPress just, you know, quietly in the background, not taking a lot of credit, powers their sites and websites for thousands of small businesses like them. In fact, more websites run on WordPress than any other platform. It's amazing the success with built-in search engine optimization, just kind of automatic, mobile-friendly design, part and parcel of every site. Your customers can find your website easily and use your website, access it, buy stuff, whatever, from any platform. You gotta love that. I want you to go to WordPress.com/windows right now. WordPress.com/windows and get started. Get started. You know, I really can't emphasize how important it is if you're a business that you have a website. And I'm just going to tell you, everybody listening to this show, and certainly this is my experience, for our generation, it's not my generation, but for us geeks, if, you know, not having a website's not loving it, like not having a phone, not like, I mean, seriously, when I consider starting up with a new business, first thing I do, I go to their website. That's where you learn about the business. If you're a small business owner and you don't have a site, you have a site that doesn't work for you, consider building your site at WordPress.com. 24/7 support, of course. Find answers to your questions. Go back to getting stuff done. It's easy to use. You can have your own domain name. The design is gorgeous. The statistics are so important, so you know how people use your site, who's using your site. WordPress.com. It's easy to get started. If you go there right now, WordPress.com/windows, you'll save 15% on any new plan purchase. WordPress.com/windows. Create your small business website right now. You could look as good, every bit as good as Paul Thurrott. WordPress.com/windows. 15% off, and we thank him so much for their support of Windows Weekly. I think Paul will agree. A good content management system is key.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You got to have it. All right, now we move along to the cloud. Microsoft kills Skype Wi-Fi. Oh, God, thank God. That was a terrible I'm sorry. No, I shouldn't say that.
No, it was. It was the most awful feature of Skype ever.
The idea was completely unrelated to Skype.
It was kind of like Xfinity Wi-Fi, right? You would find Wi-Fi hotspots and log in automatically, right?
It was designed to help, and it annoyed.
It just annoyed. You know? I turned it off immediately on every machine.
I like the idea behind it. Like, it made sense, but it never worked properly.
It also didn't. Well, it made sense, but not in the context of Skype. I mean, maybe they should do something like that within Windows or something. I mean, but...
Right. Well, okay. Anyway, Mary Jo, you had a question in with Microsoft about a potential replacement for this. Have you heard back on that?
No. So 2 years ago, it was Microsoft said that they were going to be replacing Skype Wi-Fi with a product called Microsoft Wi-Fi.
Yeah,
it was going to be the same thing.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Yesterday, when I first pinged the Microsoft Wi-Fi site, it had a message that said Microsoft Wi-Fi coming soon. Then when I went back in the afternoon, the site was offline, and I said to Microsoft, so does this mean you're not doing it, or like, what's going on? And they never got back to me. So we don't know if Microsoft Wi-Fi also is dead. My guess is yes on that.
Rachel, let me ask you a question. Are you working on a deadline?
They ask you that when you contact
them?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Well, we'd get back to you, but only if it's urgent.
Yeah, I write for the web. My deadline was 10 minutes ago, so.
It's so funny. What, can you send me clippings of your work?
Yes, yes.
That's the other one I love.
You have a photostat version of your.
Yes. What, fax us some clippings. I got that not so long ago. I was trying to get into a Pepcom event. We don't know who you are. I just go to Twit. We don't know. Can you fax us some clippings?
Yep.
No. Somebody asked me for my resume about a year and a half ago. And I said, it's online. It's at therot.com.
Yeah. It's a whole damn website. Yeah. Enjoy.
It's about,
Do you have a resume?
Not anymore.
Mary Jo? Do you keep your resume?
Yeah, I do.
Really?
I do.
But that's because you're a freelance, so you have to, you're always, it's more, for you, it's more of a CV than a resume.
It kind of is, yeah.
That makes sense, actually.
Yeah.
The last resume I have lists my experience as a teller at Bank of Boston. I worked in a bookstore part-time when I was in college.
I know. Business cards are another one. Like, when people ask me for business cards, I'm like,
what?
A business card?
Yeah. Why would you want that?
I know. Yeah.
Yep.
But I have to say though, we haven't replaced. I'm sorry, I'm distracting you from the show. But we haven't replaced business cards with anything for a while. Remember, like Evernote, and there were a lot of apps that you would tap phones or something, and none of those took off.
Yeah.
What, I don't know what you do nowadays. You say I'll see you on Facebook, I guess. I don't know. LinkedIn. I don't know.
It really does seem to have disappeared.
I never leave the office, so I really don't know. But but I imagine people need to do this.
It's funny because the truth is, going to trade shows especially, whatever, I'll be out in the world and people will ask me if I have a business card, or they'll give me a business card. And then you kind of feel that social obligation to kind of give them one as well. But I don't have, I do have some in a drawer that probably out of date.
Web 501 in the chat room said it. You just say, I'll send you an email with my contact info.
Yeah.
That's much more useful because then they can import it automatically.
Yeah.
So that's what I do.
I don't have a business card. It's 2017.
It does mean you have to have an email, like a simple memorable email address. Yeah. It can't be, MaryJo74@hotmail.com.
No.
Yep.
I'm sorry. I distract you.
Leo, this day has been nothing but one series of distractions after another.
Yeah.
How about, there's nothing to say about Microsoft Wi-Fi, but no. I bet you're right that's what's coming, right?
Although Josh Jacob, who's watching and said this on Twitter, he said, what Microsoft said they're going to be doing with cellular ARM-based PCs, this is really what the next step is for them in Wi-Fi, kind of, right?
Just so you know, there is, in fact, in Windows 10, I don't know if it's new to this Creators Update or whatever, but there's been a Microsoft Wi-Fi app in Windows 10 for a couple of versions at least.
Yeah. Right.
Which is Skype Wi-Fi. It's the same thing.
Is it called Microsoft Wi-Fi? Is that what it's called?
Yes. There's also a separate app called Paid Wi-Fi and Cellular. Now, in this computer, I don't have cellular connection, but it says get connected to participating cellular data providers. You can buy a cellular data plan with this app, but you need to have a supported SIM. So, yeah, maybe that's maybe it's really that is the future. It's not just Wi-Fi, but Wi-Fi plus cellular.
Yeah, it, you know, that's probably what they're thinking is the times have changed, and maybe we need something that's forward-looking. I think that's probably it. That makes sense. By the way, I actually know somebody in the business who pronounces it Wi-Fi.
Wi-Fi.
Have you ever met anybody that says Wi-Fi? Like recently.
Well, in a different language. I mean, in
maybe
in
that's
French,
it. He's being French.
It would be,
maybe that's
Wi-Fi
it.
In French.
He is a Francophile. That's what it is.
Oh, then it's that's probably what it is. Yeah.
It's Wi-Fi.
How about this one? So, Microsoft in blog posts, but by the way, not in the UI in Windows, spells Wi-Fi without a dash. And that drives me bad.
That's the evolution. Remember, email used to be e-mail.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Internet now is no longer capitalized. For a long time, it was capitalized.
Right. Web used to be capitalized.
Right.
How much I hate change. Has this topic ever come up?
I remember reading in another context, a book about linguistics that said that's how it evolves, is from two words to hyphenated to a single word.
And then people look at the one word later and they're like, where did this thing come from?
Right, you know? Right.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Okay.
So it's it's a kind of a natural linguistic devolution.
Yeah, I think people, Mary Jo and I are writers, and of course
you pay attention to this stuff. Yeah,
well, but you speak all day long as well. I think you two probably feel this kind of weirdness about the language that it really is kind of a mob rules thing where usage will drive the definition,
right?
And so there are people when I was in print publishing for a long, long time, we had these editors who were very crazy about grammar and style. And words meant something, and it was very specific, and they could not handle change.
Now you'll go to a blog post, and it's cliche-laden, it's grammatically horrible. The spelling sometimes is wrong.
Yeah, reading, even in the New York Times in the morning, I find myself cringing.
It's like there's no copy editors anymore. Like, I understand if you're writing fast, you file that, and you're right, and of course there aren't any copy editors, but... you really see the need for a copy editor, frankly, sometimes.
At 15 years ago, Windows IT Pro, you didn't get an article on the web, let alone into a magazine, that wasn't seen by approximately seven people.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we're seeing. We're seeing these – the first draft of articles aren't – well, I bet you guys write perfect first drafts, but
– obviously.
A lot of these young people, you know.
It's the kids.
It's the kids. Well, anyway, I'm a little different because I'm mostly spoken words. So I always, in fact, for a long time, I was the first person to ever pronounce any word. So I always felt I had a certain responsibility to establish how a word's pronounced.
I don't do this with day-to-day articles. Microsoft announces something. I wouldn't do this. But for longer articles, and I did this all the time with print magazine articles or articles I do for Windows IT Pro. I need to read them out loud to myself to discover the final mistakes, you know, that actually really helps. I think speaking the words is a big part.
I've always done that with my writing. Always. Yeah.
Mm. It doesn't surprise me.
And if you write in a voice, if you're a blogger or a columnist I'll read Dvorak's stuff. Of course, I've known him so long, but I hear his voice.
You imitate him
I can hear his voice saying the words. And I know John always reads his stuff out loud. He probably says it. He probably dictates it.
He probably says it in his sleep.
Yeah.
All right. It's like Dick Cheney, but for tech.
The Dick Cheney of tech. Oh, I'm using that.
Yikes.
You're welcome. Do not
I am using that. Azure Stack hits Technical Preview 3.
Woo!
Guessing this is a Mary Jo Foley.
It is. More news from today. There was, like we said, a ton of news today. Azure Stack is Microsoft's version of Azure that users can run in their own data centers on premises. And it's almost done. It's going to be out in mid-2017. Today, they released Technical Preview 3, which is the final technical preview before it is released. There's some incremental new features beyond what they had in Tech Preview 2. I won't bore you with all of them. There are quite a few, actually. But what's worth knowing is the date coming out mid-2017. You're going to buy it as an appliance if you want this thing. So it'll be on Dell, HPE, and Lenovo servers that are customized to run Azure Stack. And now, as of a couple of weeks ago, also going to be available on Cisco UCS servers, which that's going to come a little bit later than the other three. Azure Stack, why would you want it? If you're a company that is a believer in a truly consistent hybrid computing platform so that you could develop an app once and run it either on the Azure public cloud or on Azure Stack in your own data center, you will be interested in this. You also could do something like keep your data on premises in Azure Stack and then use it against Azure services that are up in the cloud so that you're kind of combining best of both worlds. But what's worth knowing again, TP3 out today. So go get it if you're an Azure Stack tester. That's it. That's all we have to say on Azure Stack.
If somebody comes up to you and says TP3 and you know what TP3. That means, you should go get it.
Yes.
This is interesting. I'm finding this really fascinating. There was so much talk about blockchain. Of course, that's the crypto system that's used by Bitcoin and has been touted by lots of people as useful for a lot of other things. There's a blockchain alliance, and Microsoft's a member. I find that fascinating.
I know.
What do they do?
So earlier this week, a bunch of banks, like 24 banks, plus Microsoft and a couple other tech providers, Intel was in there too, announced something called the Enterprise Ethereum Alliance. And what this is it's an alliance that is supporting using blockchain in its distributed ledger form, you know, so that it's something that can keep transactions aligned. And they're using this new body or association to kind of guide people as to how you would use the Ethereum version of this.
So that's a specific flavor of blockchain that is not the same as the Bitcoin blockchain.
No. So Ethereum is actually an open source blockchain-based platform. And there are other ones, but Ethereum's one of the big ones, especially among banks. There is a rival one that the Linux Foundation does called Hyperledger Project. That's another version of this kind of thing. But the one that the EEA group is all backing is Ethereum. And Microsoft has been really very big in blockchain. They actually launched 2 years ago something they call Blockchain as a Service on Azure. And they've been creating all kinds of
Baz.
And they've been doing a lot to enhance that by adding new templates and cryptlets. There's like a whole school of stuff around this blockchain as a service.
I'm gonna put you on the spot. Can you explain what this is and why it's useful and why like serious people are considering it?
Why banks are considering it? Right. So the way we've described it over on ZDNet is it's a shared distributed ledger. And so, you know, banks care a lot about ledgers. It keeps your transaction histories aligned, not just for – so the way people thought about it at first was keeping your cryptocurrency transaction histories all aligned. But banks care more about it almost like in a database sense, right? Banking and finance are one of the big sectors that are really big on using blockchain as a distributed ledger. So that's how I would describe why somebody would care. And if you're wondering, you know, oh, how big were the banks that care? It was like JP Morgan Chase and New York Bank. I mean, Credit Suisse, UBS, all the huge banks, they're all backing this. So they see a lot of potential in using blockchain as a way to keep transactions aligned.
So it's secure. Is that the chief use of it?
It's a distributed platform.
And it's distributed,
Right. So you know how, you know, in a ledger, how it keeps a record of what you've done, right?
Like your books.
Yeah, it's like your book. So this is a way to keep it completely secure and to keep the keep a very, very secure and accurate transactional record is the way I would describe it.
Interesting. Well, and if you think about it, that's kind of what a bank does. That's
it does.
Fundamental. Right. I mean, the banks haven't stored silver and gold in the vaults in a long time.
Exactly.
What they really are is a central number repository. Right. That's what a bank is, a database.
Yep. Yep.
How interesting. And so blockchain, these big banks are thinking blockchain, the blockchain technology will be the future of that. Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
I know.
Now, Microsoft's interest would be in being
getting people
back-end.
To use Azure. Yep. So they want people to use their implementation of blockchain as a service running on Azure. So if you think about it, banks have been one of the holdouts for the cloud, right? Like there's a lot of reasons banks cannot use the public cloud, but Microsoft's idea is, well, maybe we can get them to at least use services on the public cloud. And an example of this would be blockchain. So yeah, a way to kind of pull those banks in a little bit into the cloud world.
And because it's blockchain, because it's secure, they can use the cloud for this highly secure financial information and not worry about privacy.
That's the thinking.
Yeah, very interesting. Ethereum is out of Switzerland, by the way, we should point out, which is, I think, kind of tells you something about the intent behind it, right? That
Swiss banks
Swiss
and all.
Swiss banks, yeah. Very interesting. Cortana skill dev kit.
Okay, this one, I'm going to do a little mini Paul Thurrott rant on this one. I won't do it as well as Paul does, but I'll give it a shot.
Okay, Paul, that's you and me. We're just going to... We're just going to sit back. We're going to relax. We're going to enjoy this. Go ahead, Mary.
Okay. You know what Scala skills are, right?
Yeah.
Scala skills are features that developers can add to this Scala to extend it and make it do all kinds of cool things. There's 10,000 Scala skills now. Microsoft late last year said they were going to come out with a thing called the Cortana Skills Kit, which would be a development kit for people who want to build Cortana skills just like the Scala skills. And in fact, you could even take some of your code from your Scala skill as a developer and make it available in the Cortana skills kit.
It's basically an API for voice services.
Yeah, it's like, you know, if you want to have, SDK. I'm trying to think of an example. Like, what's a good example?
Well, I use Cortana skills all the time. So one Echo skill is Jeopardy. So the people who do Jeopardy... can you know because
wait, so they can cheat?
No. Amazon offers a platform. You use their platform. You even use their servers. Mm-hmm, smart. And it's what is it called? Lumberyard, something like that. So you write your code. It's stored on Amazon services. You don't have you don't have to pay them. It's free if you have a small number, so you can test it. Mm-hmm. And then at some point, you tell the world and you put it in the Echo database. Hey, all you have to do to add this ability to your Echo is enable the Jeopardy skill. And now, if it's not enabled, I say, let's play Jeopardy and my Echo doesn't do anything. But now I can say, let's play, first I add the skill. Now I can say, let's play Jeopardy. And it gives me five questions. And all of that data, all of the sound and everything comes, her voice, but reading something provided by the skill. And it's wonderful. I mean, that's 1,000 skill. Yeah. It's great.
10,000.
10,000. It's grown crazy.
You know, there was that big AWS outage yesterday. I saw so many people saying, all I care is I can't use my skills right now.
Right. I use it all the time. But more importantly, it makes the Echo so much more valuable.
Right.
Because anybody can add a skill to it. It makes it a little complicated because I have to know what the skill is, and I have to enable it, and then I have to remember the syntax, and that's a problem that they have to address. But it is a huge value, and if they don't do it with Cortana, they're going to miss the boat.
Well, they're going to do it, but here's the thing. They were supposed to come out with this Monday. Okay, it's only Wednesday, so 2 days have gone by. They had said the goal was to get this out on February 27th, but developers are champing at the bit for this thing. They're like, okay, so Microsoft doesn't have this yet. Haskell has 10,000 skills now. Like, come on, Microsoft. We want to build Cortana devices the same way that other people are out there building third-party Scala-enabled devices. And to add Scala skills to existing things like the Dot and all that. I mean, Microsoft needs to get going. Come on, guys. Right. Bring out the skills kit.
Apple hasn't done this either. Siri does not do this. But Google has.
Okay.
Google does have an API and SDK for the Google Home. So if you sit back, you'll be eaten alive. I think, frankly, in some respects, because Amazon beat everybody to the punch with this, they're already 2 years old. They may have won already, but they're way ahead. If you don't enter the race, you're not going to keep. You're not going to keep up.
I mean, maybe there's a good reason Microsoft hasn't announced it yet. Maybe they knew they had a ton of news this week and they were like, it's just going to get lost if we announce it this week. Or maybe they're integrating more kinds of things and with the skills kit that aren't integrated now, like some of their cognitive services. I'm not sure. But so far, we haven't seen it. And people are asking me a lot this week on Twitter. So where is it? Where is it? I don't know.
It's probably non-trivial. And the real, you know,
I'm sure it's not.
Cortana's been around as long as the Echo, but...
Yeah.
It wasn't until Amazon started eating the world with this, you know, that people even realized, oh, that would be something somebody would want to do. Well, no, you know, they should have known. The ability of third parties to enhance your voice assistant.
Great. That's awesome,
why
right?
Wouldn't you got to
do
that?
It.
Yeah.
I know. Yep.
But they are a little behind. By the way, just we'll bleep it out, but if you could say Echo instead of the A word in future.
Oh, sorry.
Because, people listen on their Echoes, and it's triggering echoes
everyone.
All over the country.
I know. We have that same problem with other words.
Yeah. We've come up, you can call Amazon Voice Services or Echo, and for the most part, that if somebody's listening and use Echo as the keyword trigger word, well, I'm sorry. I tried computer on mine, and did not work. and I don't know. We haven't figured out what to do with Siri and Cortana. So on MacBreak Weekly, sometimes we call Siri Shlomo, but I think that's I don't think that it's not clear what we're talking about. We have to.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess Cortana, you have to say "Hey" first, right? So it's a little less sensitive.
Yeah.
Well, get going, Mike. They will.
It's just I think people are really like, okay, here it comes. Where is it? Okay, where is it? You know.
Now, here's one I've never heard of. What is SMS Relay for Android? Is that a Microsoft thing? What is that?
Yeah, so about a year ago, one of the big things we were talking about was Microsoft's Messaging Everywhere initiative, and it was originally going to be part of Windows 10, I think, for the anniversary update. And right before the anniversary update was finalized, I think in June of last year, they announced they were taking it out. And they were going to make this into a Skype feature. So kind of the opposite of Skype Wi-Fi when you think about it. You know, it's going from Windows to Skype. Messaging Anywhere is a way to send and receive text messages on your computer from your phone, right? Kind of like Apple does, kind of like Pushbullet does as a third-party service. Obviously, it will work with Windows 10 mobile phones, but since nobody has that kind of a device, it will also work with Android phones. And Microsoft has never committed or even mentioned iOS, but I suspect there are going to be issues there because of Apple. And so I got a question from someone who was actually switching from the Apple ecosystem to Windows. I know, shocker. But he said, hey, this is one of those things I really like. You know, what's going on with this? And I kind of looked into this to see if Microsoft had ever said anything about it. And basically, off the top of my head, late last year, September or October timeframe, they mentioned it in the context of Windows 10 Mobile. It's called SMS Relay now. Sorry, it's not called Messaging Everywhere. And I had to look it up, and there was a blog post where they made the feature available to the general public in Skype Preview, which is, of course, a beta app, didn't add to any new features. And then they threw in this one sentence at the end of the blog post. We are also working on bringing SMS Relay to Android in the future. And I asked, so is there an update on this? And they said, no, that's our most recent statement about this feature. So as of last November, they're working on it. So in other words, if you have an Android phone and you'd like to use Windows 10 as on your computer and you would like to be able to send and receive SMS and MMS messages, it's coming, but
do you remember it worked? It did work for a short time.
Yeah, I did.
It worked when you had Cortana installed on both devices, even though you weren't using Cortana, and then they just took it away, and that was it.
I think they're trying to figure this one out. You know, it's a hard computer science.
It should be OS level. I feel like it shouldn't be OS level.
So that's the debate, right? I can see why they would add it to Windows 10, of course.
Well, for instance, if you use Google Hangouts, which I use as your messaging on Android, you can do Hangouts from the desktop in the in the Hangouts website and Chrome. And you can do it on Mac, and you can do it on Linux, and you can do it on Windows. And that's a messaging solution, right?
That makes sense.
And it's a SMS solution in a way because I use it as my SMS program.
No, I know. But in other words, Hangouts is a messaging platform, not an operating system. Right. So
that's the level it should be at, I think.
Yeah. So it makes sense that they would put it in Skype. That was my point.
Because
Skype is their messaging solution.
Well, isn't it in Skype? If I'm running Skype on an Android phone and you message me, I'll get that message.
See, that's the thing. So this is as convoluted as the name of this product. But basically, Microsoft has done some version of Skype or back in the day when it was Windows Live Messenger as your messaging solution. In other words, an all-in-one app that does proprietary network stuff, but also does, you know, standard MMS, SMS stuff, like iMessage does basically on Apple or whatever. I think that's a good idea, but, you know, the problem is they've never said they were going to do this, but I suppose you could use Skype as your messaging app on Android, right? In other words, it would do Skype, obviously, it's Skype, but it could also do MMS, SMS, I guess.
I can't remember. I'll have to check because Android does allow you to use other programs as your default SMS app. I'm not sure if Skype's one of them.
Skype is not one of them.
It's not.
To be clear, sorry. I suppose they could do this. Like, in other words, today that is not the case.
And I think that's up to the developer, right? I think that you have to put the hooks in to do that.
So does Microsoft want to do this, right?
You know
Microsoft
want it to work? You want it to work in Cortana. You want to be able to, with any voice assistant, say, send a text. Yes.
So that's the thing, and that's what Mary Jo was just alluding. So the interesting thing is
that's the OS
Cortana can serve as a form of glue between these different implementations, right? That Cortana, as a cloud service that knows all about you, knows your phone number, knows which computers you're signed into, and all that kind of stuff, could facilitate this. And by the way, does or did facilitate this, right? Remember, I think the thing Mary Jo is referring to was kind of a partial implementation.
Yeah,
like you could do, I don't remember the details, but you could from Cortana do something in one direction. I think what it was, I think you could with your voice say, send a text message, and it would actually go out through your phone. But I don't think it would do anything on the way back. I could have that half wrong, but it's something, it was something like that.
Responding is the issue.
It was kind of a half. Maybe it was replies.
I think it worked. I think it actually worked both ways because I would get, like, if somebody sent me a message on my Android phone, it would show up on my Windows 10 PC and I could answer it back by texting on the Windows 10 PC.
Really?
Hmm. Yeah. Hmm.
So that's the more challenging thing. I mean, I can send text messages with Echo, I think. I mean, any device should be able to send text messages. I understand getting a reply would be another matter. But this is, by the way, why people use third-party messaging apps. If WhatsApp, for instance, has a desktop client. I mean,
yeah, but can you send MMS, SMS with WhatsApp?
Believe it or not, I use on, or have used on Android, I've used Facebook Messenger, which you can absolutely use.
One of the ones that can do both. You're right. I've seen that. And
I can't remember. Let me look and see which apps I can
choose. The proliferation of messaging apps right now is unbelievable.
It's a huge problem.
Yeah. It is. It really is.
I can use Messenger, Hangouts. I can use Signal, which is actually a great encrypted messenger.
Okay.
I might not have Skype. I can't do it with Skype. I probably don't have WhatsApp on here either. But, so I'd have to put WhatsApp on here. I bet you can. I think that's just a developer adding whatever hooks Android needs to do that. And then on your phone, SMSs come into that app. That's your SMS app.
That's the thing. Like, in other words...
So you don't need a bridge from Windows. You just, you know...
Well, it gets weird if you have to use a certain app, right? So you should be able to use whatever app you want. Who cares? It's MMS, SMS, right. and
It is. This is the holy grail. And messaging is a mess. And all. And if you look at what Google's doing, it's crazy. When I don't even understand Google's messaging strategy. They have five different programs. They have Hangouts. They have Allo. They have Android messages. Then each and then each manufacturer has their own messages.
Yep.
And it's just insane.
Yeah, it is. It's crazy.
And I blame Google for this. I don't understand what why they're not. Just take make Allo your messaging platform on all.
Yeah, make phones. One.
Make one. Pick one.
One. Yeah.
Hangouts. There's.
There was nothing wrong with Hangouts. By the way, use Hangouts.
I love Hangouts.
Put the stupid bot stuff in there. Why does it have to be an Allo?
Exactly.
Yeah, I've never understood what they're doing.
And now they have this new thing, RCS, which they're pushing, which I doubt anybody's supporting.
Right.
No, you know, the other problem is Apple, because Apple is a silo. And Apple just... It's easy. Just use Apple and everything works in messages, except you can't talk to anybody else.
Sure.
Or they're green bubbles. I'm sorry. Nokia. I cannot believe the interest. I don't understand it for a minute. Everybody's talking about this 3310, the return of the candy bar.
The 3310, I don't understand. This is like a hipster affectation with like turnstiles and. Or turntables, rather.
Turnstiles, too. I like that. Right. Who wants a phone that's just a phone? What good is that?
It's like I'm looking for like a digital suppository or something. Do you sell something like that?
Nokia,
like,
does this mean Nokia's back in the phone business? What was their contract with Microsoft? I was trying to remember. It said they could go back in the business this year, right?
Yeah.
I think it was this year. Was it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's not Nokia. So Nokia has a license agreement with HMD. It's actually HMD that's making these devices.
So this is like a Polaroid. This is like Polaroid or.
Well, you know what? Actually, it's not. So it is, I mean, it is at a very basic level, but it's a little bit better than that. HMD's headquarters is right next to Nokia's former headquarters in Espoo.
Oh, it's in Espoo. All right. Well, that counts.
Yeah. There's something going on between the companies, right? It's not just Nokia saying, here, take our logo and run with it.
Okay. So it's like Google having HTC make their Pixel.
Oh, yeah, I think so. There's a Finnish thing. They're being very respectful to the Nokia history.
Oh, it's beautiful. And it's got a color screen. It's got Snake.
I'm not talking about the 33 thing. I'm talking about the smart.
So there's other phones too, Nokia?
Yeah, so they have three Android smartphones.
Oh, I didn't see that. Android 6, everybody's paying Android attention 5. To the 3310.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't understand how this little thing has distracted everybody. We can all be nostalgic for Snake. But the thing is, over here, we've got these Android devices, which look really interesting. There's no true flagship in the sense that, like, one of these is not shipping with, like, a Snapdragon 835 or whatever. It's fair to say that they're all basically mid-level phones, like 400 series Snapdragon processors. But honestly... the quality of the devices looks really high.
Somewhere in the video, it's just weird.
Oh, by the way.
It's some guy in a rock.
If you want it to be even... So this video is terrible, unfortunately. So if you listen to this, this is a Finnish version of Johnny Ives, and it's terrible.
We are driven by deep understanding of the processes and the elements that make the phones. Our design utilizes the natural properties.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know. It's like an Apple. I'm sorry. It's like an SNL parody video.
Oh, my God. He's holding it up to the light.
Listen, it's a solid object. It's the Nokia legacy.
Wow. So they obviously can do this now. I mean, clearly the shackles are off.
But the thing is, these devices are actually really nice looking. Like, they really are. And the one thing I found this hard to express. I sort of mentioned it in this post. I think it was this post or no, it was some other post I wrote about this. But I sort of meant to write something to the tune of like, what is it about Nokia? Like what's the emotional hold that this company has over people? Because it's very real. And the thing that I came to personally was that Windows Phone for me was a really big deal, right? When Microsoft announced this. I saw this as the second coming. I thought this was going to be the biggest thing ever. And I really felt very strongly about it.
The Nokia Lumia phones were fantastic.
Yes.
They were great phones.
Yes. But the thing is, what I came to understand over time was that Nokia was the bigger part of this thing. And if you look at all of the stuff they did in a very short period of time, with the build quality and the device diversity and the cameras the accessories, the Lumia-specific apps and services. They were like the real deal. You know, Windows Phone was kind of a little almost, I don't want to say immature or, you know, kind of a minor project. And then this giant company with decades of experience walked in and said, we got this. And they went nuts with it. And it was awesome. And it failed. I mean, it, you know, they didn't do well in the market. I know that. But the stuff that they brought was so credible and so amazing and was an immediate, effective counter to whatever Apple was doing at the time, whatever Google was doing with Android at the time, whatever. That's what's missing now. You get a bunch of third-rate companies putting out stupid phones based on a lesser version of the OS that no one should be using because it's terrible, and it's a completely different world. But the thing that was special about Windows Phone really wasn't even Windows Phone, right? It was Nokia. And I realized this new stuff is never going to – it's not – it's never going to reach that level.
And I wonder if these are even intended for the U.S. market. I mean, the Nokia 6 is $250. That's
they're not, right?
Yeah, this is for the developing world, I presume.
I think I saw a map and it showed every country except U.S., Canada, and a couple South American countries, but everything else in the world, yes.
Sure, where Nokia was humongous, right? I mean, because remember, when Nokia was running the world, we didn't even know who they were here. I mean, they were nothing. Right. You know, it was BlackBerry here, basically. I mean, you'll be able to buy these things on Expansys, and I fully intend to do that. I'm very curious about these things. Mm. It's pure Android, which is great.
They don't add a lot of software to it. It's like,
although you have to wonder if that's going to happen over time. Like, in other words, and I drew that comparison in a different article. If you look back at what Nokia did with Lumia and the Windows Phone platform, the first job was to get into the market with phones and to differentiate with the phones. But over time, the real differentiation became the other stuff, you know, the apps, the services, the accessories. They created an entire ecosystem. And that is ultimately what I think what made that Windows Phone, which was really Microsoft plus Nokia right back then. Mm. I think that's what made this platform so exciting for such a brief period of time.
I mean, didn't Nokia get rid of or transfer all of its engineers, all of its phone assets? So, So this is a new group of people. There's really HMD. Who is HMD? Is that a bunch of former Nokia engineers?
Some of them are. Some of them are. And, of course, like, not everyone went to Microsoft. Or, more to the point, a lot of people went to Microsoft, but that doesn't mean they went to Redmond. They stayed in Finland, and then they all got laid off.
Right.
You know, and so this is, there have been a couple of small efforts to get Nokia people back together. Like Jola is an example of a company that it was trying to do this, a bunch of former Nokians. There's no doubt that this place is rife with former Nokia employees. It's Finland. There, you can't walk down the street without bumping into one of these people. Right. They were, you know, some huge part of the economy. So we'll see. I'm kind of goofy with this. Like, I shouldn't be as interested in this as I am, but I'm super interested in this.
Well,
and I
feel terrible because I've been talking about the 3310 ad nauseum, and I didn't even know that there were some other.
So, by the way, that's
phones.
In many ways their marketing working, because they obviously, I don't think they really think they're going to sell a bunch of those stupid things. But
right.
But that's grabbed everyone's
Nokia's
attention.
Back.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Interesting. Yep. Emily the Strange, who is in our chat room, says she works for Nokia, says the Alcatel-Lucent acquisition brought in a lot of phone engineers. That makes sense. Alcatel's a French telecom, and Lucent, of course, was the old Bell Labs. So that makes sense. They do have some people inside. All right. A little bit of Xbox. Break for Mary Jo. Game Pass. Sorry. What's that?
Microsoft announced a subscription service, or another subscription service for the Xbox this week. Because, you know, we don't throw enough money at Xbox every month yet. And so what Xbox Game Pass will do is provide Xbox One users with 100 games that they have to actually download and install. You don't stream them. So it's not exactly like the Sony PlayStation Now. Is that the name of that service? I think.
Yeah.
But it, obviously it's meant to compete with it. You can, as many as you can fit on your Xbox, you can download and use. It's going to be Xbox One titles, of course, but also Xbox 360 games that work through backwards compatibility. So this is an interesting idea, and I think it's a really good idea. Actually, I should say it's over 100 games. Sony, by comparison, right now has over 400 games in their service, but they're all legacy games, meaning like PlayStation 3 games in that case. So this one will be newer games and older games. Some big ones like Halo 5 Guardians is in there. NBA 2K16 is in there. Soul Calibur 2. But, you know, $9.99 a month, right? And so think about that over the course of a year. So $10 a month, 12 months, $120. That's the price of two games. So if you were going to play two games, buy two games, $60 each, $120 in 1 year, and you played them for some number of weeks or months and then we're done with them forever, for the same price, you could have access to 100 games for that 1 year. This is the same case, you know, kind of argument we make for music services, right? I think this thing makes a lot of sense. The problem is it's not all games, right? With a music service, especially today, pretty much you're going to get, you know, the wide body music that's out there. I know there are exceptions, but this thing, it's a little bit like Netflix. It's kind of a goofy selection of games. I'm sure there's going to be some duds in there and some silly games, but cool. You know, like this is it's a good idea. And of course, it also lends itself to the natural question of the thing we've all been asking for a long time. You know, they've kind of tiptoed around it with things like the Work and Play bundle or Office 365. Could you just have like a Microsoft service that just gives me all this stuff for like, I don't know, $20 a month or something? Like, give me OneDrive with extra storage. Give me Office 365. Give me Groove Move, you know, Music Pass. Give me, you know, I don't know. Maybe they get there eventually.
One difference for this is that you download the game, right? The PlayStation Now is streaming.
That's right. And that, by the way, pros and cons to this, but I think I'm not sure how much of a pro it is to be able to play games offline these days, but I suppose it is for some people.
You know, I use the GeForce now on my NVIDIA Shield, and I'm amazed at how well it works. I mean, I have a good connection, not, you know, I think it's 100 megabit, but it plays just like it's local. It's really interesting.
Right. Well, Leo, these games also play like they're local.
Because they are.
Yeah, that's true.
And actually, storage is no longer an issue with the Xbox. I mean...
It depends on the Xbox. So, you know, the original Xbox, and most Xboxes sold today have 500 gig hard drives.
But you could easily plug in an external USB drive.
That's, by the way, yeah.
Which is what I do, right. And I'm sure you do.
I just swapped out mine for the 2 terabyte Xbox One S, and it's funny because I have all these games installed on it. When you go to your games page, it just... It fills up this giant grid of games. It's so awesome.
So interesting. I guess you should look at the games they offer before you decide.
Exactly. Exactly right. So that's coming soon, sometime later in the spring.
And I noticed some traffic from Paul about achievements. Paul's very focused on achievements.
Yeah. I thought this one was kind of fun. So... when you get an achievement today, in fact, let me just bring up the Xbox app. You can go into the Xbox app and you can look at your achievements, right? And so if it ever loads, I will go there and do that. But here we go. So you can go into a particular game and it will say, eventually it will say, it will list the achievements for the game and it will tell you, you know, how many gamer score you got for that. And, you know, geez, this thing is worthless. Okay. It's just moving really slowly. I can't even bring this thing up. Anyway.
Well, I'm looking at your website, and you've got a
there you go. Yes, look at the picture I have. Yeah, so there you go. So it says, 28.57% of gamers have unlocked this.
Yeah.
Before, what that would have said is 29%. And the yes.
That's
the improvement
the
they made.
That's they added the change. Two decimal points.
Yes. Yep, they made it more accurate.
It's accurate to 2 decimal points now.
Excuse me, Mr. Spencer. I know you said 40% of gamers unlocked it, but actually the correct number is 40.03%.
Wow.
Yep. You know, like it would be Untapped added like a quarter of a percentage rating and everybody went wild. So this is the equivalent. Yep.
You know what would be cool is if they said the actual number, like 1,753,272 gamers have unlocked this. And then 40%. And then maybe you could do a quartile
and you could
ask you a question here. So in other words, that one said, I think 33.81% of gamers have unlocked this.
Yeah.
Is that of all gamers? Oh. Is that of all gamers on Xbox Live?
People who
is that of all gamers who have played this game?
But congratulations.
This thing could be improved further.
Because you're a weapon master, and only 0.65% of gamers haven't unlocked that.
Yeah, baby.
Oh, actually, you haven't unlocked it yet.
Oh, no, I'm 13% of the
You've
way.
You've got a way to go.
I'm never going to
Is that 13.0% or 13.01%?
That 13% is the percentage of weapons in the game that are assault rifles, the only thing that I use.
You will soon be a weapon master, young Jedi Knight.
No, I will not. No, it's actually what's going to happen is the next Call of Duty will come out.
Right. You have to start, reset it all.
Yep.
Well, we're going to get to the back of the book in just a sec. Mary Jo Foley has some Enterprise picks, and of course, our beer of the week, Paul Thurrott with tips and apps. Before we do that, though, let me give a shout out to our sponsor. They make this show possible, our great sponsors. If you are looking to buy a house or refi a house, and you're listening to this show, you will be very interested in what Quicken Loans has just introduced. Quicken Loans, the best mortgage lender in the country. That's a given. You just look at the website and all the J.D. Power customer satisfaction awards year after year after year. Number one in customer satisfaction for like the last 7 years. But they're even going, it's going to go to 11. Because now you can get a loan, a home loan or a refi from the best mortgage lender in the country. And you can do it entirely online. No more digging through paperwork and schlepping a banker's box of crap to a mortgage lender or going hat in hand to the bank. You just go sit down on your phone. You could do this in an open house. You see something you like. This has happened to me. Honey, we should buy this. This is really nice. The price is low. Yeah, but we don't have a mortgage loan, dear. Well, nowadays, go fire up quickenloans.com/windows and within minutes, you can get approved for a loan that's custom tailored to exactly your specifications. You have sliders that let you choose the rate, choose the term. And yes, you don't have to fax them documents or anything. I literally was doing that from a cruise ship the last time we bought a house. That was no fun. You can actually submit your pay stubs and your bank statements just, you know, on the phone, on the tap the app. It's amazing. And all that stuff's online now anyway, right? So why should you have to print it out and fax it to them or carry it into them? This is the 21st century. That's why you got to try Rocket Mortgage. When it comes to that big decision, choosing a lender, you got to work with someone you trust who has your best interests in mind, who understands that you want to do it all online. QuickenLoans.com/windows. Rocket Mortgage is an equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states and MLSConsumerAccess.org number 3030. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, quickenloans.com/windows. All right, Paul Thurrott, your tip of the week.
Yes. So I'm going with a kind of a golden oldie here. Actually, I'm going with a few of those. So today is March 1st, which means it is time for more Games with Gold. And this month is actually one of the best ones we've seen in a long time. In fact, I am going to get all four of these games, and I haven't been able to say that in a long time. So on the Xbox One side, the game that's became available today is called Layers of Fear.
I never heard
Oddly
of
enough, yeah, it's kind of a horror game. And I actually played this partially on
games.
Yeah. It's available in VR on Android. So if you with a DreamView, yeah,
is it scary?
It's kind of creepy. Yeah, it's pretty good. So it's kind of a horror puzzle game is the way I would describe it. Later in the month, you'll be able to get Evolve, and it's the ultimate edition of that game. So it's got all the add-ins built into it. That's kind of an awesome shooter game. But on the Xbox 360, is a classic shooter, Borderlands 2, which is a fantastic game. In fact, my son still plays this pretty regularly.
I love Borderlands 2, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really good one. And then there's kind of an old school 2D parallax shooter called Heavy Weapon that's becoming available at the middle of the month. So this is a great, it's just kind of an awesome month for.
Yeah, most of the time those games with golds weren't anything I'm as interested in. But these this look good. Looks good.
Yeah, there's always some, you know, there'll be like some game where you're like, yeah, I used to really like that game. And
right. Might as well get it. Yeah. I've got a 2 terabyte hard drive.
I'm not going to play Monkey Island again, but what the hell. Yeah, this month's great. These are all actually really good games. And then I have three app pick app picks, or at least app mentions. Mozilla acquired Pocket this week, which reminded me that Pocket is one of the best apps. I use this app every single day.
Me too.
In fact, it's kind of goofy. It has changed the way that I read to the point where I will be reading the New York Times on my iPad using the New York Times app. And today, for example, they had a really long form article about small towns in France, which are all falling apart because businesses are leaving. And it was really long, and so I saved it to Pocket. And then I just read it in Pocket. I just prefer reading things in Pocket. I don't know how to explain it. It's an awesome app. It's free. You can pay for a premium version if you want to. It's great. Works in, you know, cross-platform, et cetera, and on the web. This past week, Microsoft also updated Arrow Launcher, which is its launcher, like home screen replacement for Android. I've recommended this one at least two or three times in the past. Of course, they keep upgrading it. Arrow 3 is described as the biggest update yet. I'm not quite sure if it's the biggest update yet, but it is a big update. It's a beautiful launcher, works really well. They've cut down on the memory usage and jumped the performance of it on set. Right. They're actually beta testing tablet support now. And I don't actually at this moment have an Android tablet, but, you know, again, they keep moving forward with it. And I think for Microsoft guys who are a little tentative in the Android world, some of the lock screen and home screen replacement stuff that Microsoft does, really high quality. And this is a really, really nice one. Definitely something to look at. And then right before the show, Microsoft announced that Google Calendar and contact support is finally coming to Outlook 2016 for Mac. And so if you use Outlook 2016 on the Mac, you know that you can connect your Google account, but you only get the email inside of Outlook, because Outlook does everything. And so now they're getting the full meal deal. It's only available to Insider Fast users right now, and only some of them. They're going to broaden that to other Fast users on the Fast Ring in the Insider program, and then they'll roll it out more broadly. I mentioned this on Twitter, and somebody brought up a quote from Microsoft saying that they were eventually going to put this out on Windows as well. And so I think today, I should say, I know today, you can in fact connect a Google account to Outlook on the PC, but it is really painful and it's not particularly sophisticated from a technology standpoint. And actually, it might not even work with newer Google accounts where you're not grandfathered in with the EAS stuff they used to do. I think it only works because I have an old account. But this is coming to Windows as well at some point in the future, I don't know, near future, but sometime in the future.
Good. Somebody was asking me about that.
I get asked about it fairly regularly.
On the radio show, so that's good to know.
Yep.
Coming soon.
Coming soon.
Mary Jo Foley, time for an enterprise pick.
Yes. My enterprise pick is something called Windows 10 Virtual Labs, and I got this pick from Casey Hill, who is at Casey in Orlando on Twitter. I didn't realize there were new TechNet virtual labs specific to all things Windows 10 for IT pros. So what these are ways that users can go into a cloud-based private virtual machine environment and try something out to learn how to do it. So there are new Windows 10 virtual labs around some of the things about Windows 10 that people have been a little confused about, like what it means to have Windows as a service and how to deploy that. What else do they have? They have a Windows Store for Business, deploying apps in your enterprise, using Internet Explorer Enterprise Mode to fix compatibility issues in your organization. There's a whole bunch of these, and you can just go and get instructions and get inside of a private cloud virtual machine and try these things out so that you know how to actually do them when it's time to do them in your own organization.
Nice.
So the best way to find out about these is probably to search for Windows 10 Virtual Labs, because the URL on TechNet is a little cumbersome. So I won't repeat it here. I don't know if there's an easier way to find this, but they're very visible. They're out there, and there's at least a good 10 or more of these already available. So
these are great. I mean, it's a great way to make mistakes and not pay the price. You know, you don't have to own any of this stuff. It's really
Microsoft's don't try smart. This in your org, right? try
exactly.
it this way first.
Yeah, because you can always shut the page down. And
you can.
Don't tell anybody what happened.
Yeah.
And code name of the week.
Okay, I have a gaming code name today.
What?
Woo!
What?
Finally.
I know. So you know that Xbox Game Pass that Paul was talking about earlier? The code name for that was Project Arches, A-R-C-H-E-S. So I want you guys, Leo and Paul, to help me figure out why that might be the code name. My guess is, are
they assume that all gamers live at Mickey D's?
Yeah, living at Mickey D's. I'm like, what the Arches?
I think, don't they name them after, because there is the Arches National Park.
Oh, true.
Yeah, I'm thinking they named it after these golden arches.
That makes more sense, right?
Microsoft likes the great outdoors.
You're going back to place names. Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
I didn't know if it was a Halo or a Minecraft name also. I wasn't sure.
Could it be, Paul? Could it not Minecraft, but could it tie to Halo?
No, I don't think so.
I think it's...
No.
Well, I don't know. But, gamers aren't known for their love of national parks, but or even any time outdoors. But
I know. It's just an odd one, right? So if you hear anybody saying Project Arches, they mean the Xbox Game Pass.
I feel like Halo might... There might be something.
I know.
Yeah. Beer pick time, and I think we've earned it today.
I think so. And this is a good one. It's a coffee oatmeal stout.
Yum.
And yum. And yum. Yep. The beer pick is Modern Times Black House. Modern Times is a brewery in San Diego. There are many excellent craft beer breweries in San Diego. This one... I recently got to try in a can because they're distributing now in New York, Modern Times is. And this is like such a smooth, easy to drink, mellow coffee oatmeal stout. It's like every sip you feel like you're drinking chocolate coffee. Oh, it's just delicious.
I got to stay away from this.
And only 5.8%. Oh. So you could drink one or two and be okay.
That's not bad.
You'd be fine. Yep. I was surprised how just like it just tastes like the best cup of coffee you've ever had, pretty much.
Now I really want it.
It's
and
really,
it gets
really
you drunk. Good. Man,
it's
that
a beer
awesome.
Yet a coffee. It's like hard to know where the boundary is there.
It's got a little bit of everything.
It does. Everything that you might love in one can.
Wow. That sounds so good. Well, I'm going to look for it.
Yeah, I bet you can find that one out there.
Serve in an English pint, shaker, or snifter. Or just pour it right into your mouth.
Yes.
Coffee roasty stout. Now, Paul, you're not drinking that. I mean, that's got to have carbs out the wazoo, right?
I'm not going to live long enough to be able to drink that again.
Sounds good. Ladies and gentlemen, look at how these wonderful people have done. Now colleagues at the lovely...
I'm taking her down with me, Leo.
Yeah.
Yep, Petri.com.
Petri.com. And click on the, what is it, IT? What's it called? IT Reunion?
IT Unity.
IT Uni.
But you don't even need to go there to start seeing the tech community champs that we're posting.
Nice.
Yep.
Congratulations on the new gig. You'll also find
Mike.
And I'm glad to hear this because I was a little worried. You'll still find Mary Jo writing at allaboutmicrosoft.com. Or ZDNet blog. And Paul Thurrott is still at Thurrott.com. Thurro double good.com. And his books, don't forget, leanpub.org. No, leanpub.com. It's not a nonprofit, although it might appear that way to Paul.
Feels
sometimes.
Like a sub-bunch.
Yeah.
But
leanpub.com. We do Windows Weekly every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. That would be 1900 UTC. If you want to tune in and watch live, we'd love it if you would join us. You can also join us if you are watching live. Comment in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. Now, if you can't do live, you can always do on-demand audio and video available after the fact at twit.tv/dubdub for Windows Weekly. We're on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe and don't miss an episode. Happy March.
I know. Wow.
The first day of March. They say, now this isn't true here, but they say in back east, March comes in like a lion and goes out like a lamb.
It's the opposite today.
It's very springy.
It's coming
right?
in like a lamb, and we'll see how it goes out. But
nice. I'm glad.
It's 70 here today.
Oh, man. Enjoy.
Which is bizarre.
Enjoy. That'll be fun. All right. Well, we'll see you next time. Thank you on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.